This is episode 39 of the Fifth Estate podcast. David Harsanyi and Trump wiretaps and possible dirty tricks.
Hey there, Fifth Estate listeners. Neil Doing here with a word from our friends at SimpliSafe. I heard an alarming news story out of California recently. A woman who was hired to clean homes was stealing from them at the same time. Imagine that. You pay someone to help take care of your home, and they burglarize you. How do you protect yourself from something like this? A regular security system won't protect you from the people you know and trust. No. Here's what you do. You get SimpliSafe. SimpliSafe makes it possible to know what's going on at home. If you want to check in, just live stream footage from the SimpliSafe camera directly to your smartphone anytime you want. You can get text message and email alerts when someone arms or disarms your system, so you'll be sure, you'll be confident that your home is safe. For 24/7 protection you can really trust, go to simplisafe.com/ricochet. That's spelled SimpliSafe.com. Order a SimpliSafe home security system today, and you'll even get our special 10% discount. Go now, SimpliSafe.com/ricochet.
All right, it's time for another episode of the Fifth Estate. My name is Jay Caruso. I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Neil Doing. How are you?
Little hungry, Jay. How are you?
I know the feeling. Certainly feeling better than we were on that Saturday at CPAC the last time we recorded. That's for sure, right?
Yes, I have recovered my will to live and also my ability to drink alcohol. So
excellent. That's
things are looking up.
Yes, yes. Before we get started, as always, you know, our fine listeners, we love you guys, and we hope that you like this show. And if you do, we ask please that you go out to iTunes, leave us a review, leave us a star rating. Also, encourage your friends to subscribe. They can go to the website, fifthestate.us, and there's ways to subscribe there, several different ways, whether you're an iTunes user or not. There's a couple different ways to do that, so we definitely do appreciate it.
Yes, please do. We appreciate it ever so much.
All the time. Okay, so we... wow, you know, surprisingly, Donald Trump set the political world, afire again with some tweets that he made on a Saturday morning.
Hold on, Jay. Wait, the president of the United States said something inflammatory on Twitter?
He did.
Whoa.
I know. I know it's rare. It doesn't happen often, but he did it this time, and so... It created quite the firestorm. It accused President Obama of doing something, and it has to do with, you know, with FISA warrants and national security and wiretaps and spies and all that good stuff. And so we figured, you know, if we're going to talk about this, let's bring somebody in, not somebody who's necessarily on the left or even far on the right, but somebody who's got a little bit more of a libertarian outlook on this and has discussed this kind of stuff before and kind of get their take on it. And so David Harsanyi from The Federalist is here with us. David, how are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate you. Appreciate you being here. So as we were just talking about, of course, you know, the president woke up on a Saturday morning, and apparently, you know, based upon what I've read, and I don't know if you've seen anything different, but you know, something that he decided to. Read from, it looks like it was a couple of different stories called together. One, Breitbart, it was what he was reading, but it also came from something from Mark Levin was talking about, and also an article that Louise Mensch had published in Heat Street back in November, at the day before the election. And essentially he went on to say that, you know, Barack Obama, President Obama, had tapped his phones in Trump Tower. During the campaign, quite
yeah,
an accusation.
Yeah, Jay, why don't I just read out one of these tweets
here? Yeah, go ahead.
Here. terrible. Just found out that Obama had my wires tapped in Trump Tower just before the victory. Nothing found. This is McCarthyism. Now, that is an interpretation of Trump's tweet, but that's quite an allegation. So, David, what the heck is going on here?
I don't know what's going on. I mean, it sounds pretty crazy, but I'm generally open to believing the worst possible explanation for, you know, the worst possible scenario for every politician and what they do. So I'm willing to believe that Donald Trump was tapped by the Obama administration, though I think it seems to me that it seems like a pretty baseless charge. I will, though, in defense of Donald Trump, say he probably makes no distinction between Obama and the U.S. government. He probably makes no distinction between getting caught up in, you know, a sweep of, you know, some routine surveillance of Russian diplomats and someone, you know, maybe he's speaking to one and he's caught up in that. So to him, you know, everything is about him. So it was a tap on him specifically. But, you know, who knows what he's talking about? I think, you know, it seems like a baseless allegation. It seems like it came from Breitbart and some other sort of sources. It's probably not the first place you should go for news of this sort. But I'll also say this in defense of Donald Trump, or in a way in defense of Donald Trump, is that his allegations are baseless, as are the allegations that I keep hearing about him colluding with the Russians. So far, I've seen no evidence of any of this going on, but the press treats these two things very differently. Just wanted to mention that. I feel weird when I'm defending him, but
yeah, no, and it's an interesting thing, because somebody else had pointed out, I can't remember where I read it, where somebody said, you know, he may not have necessarily meant his specific phone, but that he sees Trump Tower as his, so everything in it is his. So if he says my lines were tapped, he was just talking about any kind of phone that might have been in his building. But I think the problem, of course, is that, you know, he goes off half cocked with this kind of thing, and essentially, you know, he starts a firestorm.
If the president of the United States, Barack Obama at the time, actually tapped the candidate for the Republican nominee, it would be the biggest story, not since Watergate, but like ever. It would be massive. And he just throws it out there with zero proof. And then he doesn't talk about it anymore. And then the White House says, we're not going to talk about it anymore. It's just crazy, but somehow it's just kind of normal now as well. So, you know, who knows?
Yeah. Is this the new normal? We just expect that Donald Trump will say baseless things on Twitter that ignite a media firestorm and essentially keep his staff very busy for a day or two, and then it just recedes. Is this receding or is this still ongoing? You know, like, so is this our new normal?
It's been what, like a month since more than a month since he's become president. It seems like years already. So every day there's something new that's abnormal that is normal. But I don't know how you govern like this for 4 years. So I don't know what's going to happen. I can't. It seemed like for a few days, at least after the pseudo State of the Union speech, you know, he was quiet on Twitter and he hadn't really said anything crazy, and then he went off. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe one day someone will convince him that it's probably not the best idea to be on Twitter. I think someone wrote a column today somewhere, I forget where, that you sort of imagined an alternative reality where Donald Trump wasn't on Twitter and what this presidency would look like. And it seems to me that it looks far more normal in that way, in that alternative reality. But I don't know. He does things the way he wants to do. And I doubt he's the sort of guy who's going to take advice from some, you know, someone on his staff to get it off Twitter. But
I read an article that actually proposed an idea that I've had before, which is that Twitter should just ban him, give him the Milo treatment and just ban him from the site so he can't use it anymore. That'd be hard. I mean, for the good of the country.
Yeah. would be their patriotic duty to, yeah,
right,
to help him help himself in a way, right?
Oh God, and then we'd have to deal with the free Trump hashtags, Neil. So
he'd just get onto Gab or whatever the racist one is. So.
Or he'd take his platform to Facebook for exclusively, something like that. But
you'd have some
like Sarah Palin.
Yeah, he'd have some sock puppet account and troll everyone.
Yeah. Or he'd be like that one at the time when he was actually his own spokesperson.
Right.
You just create a fake account, he'll start tweeting and saying, I just talked to Trump today.
Yeah.
Just imagine him with just an egg. He just doesn't even put up an avatar. It's just a Twitter egg, but we all know it's the president.
That'd be perfect. But I think one of the things, Dave, is that it illustrates, I mean, it's funny. There was an article I read when I was looking at this, and they were talking about how this is causing all kinds of chaos now, and that Trump is annoyed and he's mad about, you know, with Jeff Sessions supposedly making a surprise announcement to recuse himself after he said he wasn't going to do it. And then you have people going on TV for Trump saying, you know, yeah, he believes this is to be true. And then they ask, well, how do you know? And he's, and then, you know, they say, well, I haven't really spoken to the president, but this is what I'm hearing. And it's funny because I think it was like maybe 10 days into his administration when there was something in the Washington Post about how Trump was enjoying all of the chaos that, you know, that didn't understand what was going on or what was happening. And now it seems another 20 days after that, or maybe 30 days after that, Trump is not too happy with the chaos. You know, his agenda is getting messed up, but at the same time, he's in part responsible for that. I mean, the bar was low, so what, blah, 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 you could say that, but his speech was very successful. You had even critics praising him, and then within 3 days, that's completely forgotten.
Right. I have two competing theories about Donald Trump. One is that he's sort of this, and this is just for fun, I don't actually believe this first one, is that he's some kind of evil genius and that everything he does really has some kind of purpose. The truth of the matter is it's probably more like retroactive, or it's more like I liken it to looking at like a piece of art that's, you know, just abstract, and then you sort of imbue it with all this meaning just because you can, even though it's not really there. I think a lot of people treat Trump in that way. So anyway, my evil Trump genius theory is that everyone's talking about investigations. And frankly, like I said before, I don't think there's really a ton of hard evidence to go forward with that. I don't think Jeff Sessions actually lied. I don't even know why he recused himself. But Donald Trump's like, you know what? I'm just going to throw something out there, too. Let's have an investigation of Barack Obama. How do you like that? You know? And then it becomes all his sort of minions go out there and all his fans go out there, and it becomes this sort of competing narrative about who did what. But I have to say, we also have to remember that Barack Obama is not above, you know, using government in a way that he shouldn't have and abusing his executive power. Now, I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So it's plausible or plausible enough that something wrong went on. So that plausibility allows people to say, oh, maybe Donald Trump's right. And I think he has as much of a case to make for an investigation as Democrats do, keep saying that he colluded with Russia, where I see zero proof of that. Anyway, that's my evil Trump sort of theory, but I don't know how true.
No, I think that's a valid point, David. You know, that we do need to keep in mind the history of the Obama administration and their use of, you know, the IRS and other avenues to, you know, not necessarily persecute their political opponents, but certainly inconvenience them. So yeah, it's a valid question to ask. And then that leads to another question, which is, could Trump, if he's serious about this, just simply ask for this information to be declassified? Is that a possibility for the president?
I think he can, right? I mean, I think he has the ability to do that if he wants. But it seems unlikely to me that he would do that, and, you know, unlikely to me that Barack Obama called someone up on the phone and asked them to tap the Trump wiretap the Trump towers. So it seems unlikely to me that he would do that, though he certainly could. And the way that the White House, his sort of staff and Spicer and all these people have treated that his contention about being tapped seems to me to be one of these things that is not actually true in the way that they deal with it. Though you know, I am curious to know what he saw. I mean, we assume that he read these articles because he used certain words that corresponded with them, but maybe he saw something else. I don't know. I mean, it's weird with Donald Trump because he's often unhinged and says crazy stuff, but sometimes he says stuff that everyone thinks is crazy, and then it turns out that he's not that crazy. So, or he's just sort of crudely told us about it, that there is some sort of seed of reality to it. I don't know. Seems unlikely to me, but I haven't completely ruled it out.
The point about Barack Obama, it was the IRS. It was also, you know,
Well, the Fox reporter.
Yeah, James Rosen. Yeah. You know, I mean, everybody said it was just reading his emails. They were actually tracking his movements to like the State Department and reading his emails, looking at his phone records, and then actually named him as an unindicted co-conspirator, and then also labeled him a flight risk so that they wouldn't have to inform him of the surveillance that they were performing on him. So,
friend of the show, James Rosen, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. And so, it's certainly plausible that the president that President Obama would do something like this. So even if there's not an order from President Obama to tap Trump's phones, if there was a FISA warrant that was issued that was, you know, even if narrow in scope in that it was looking at information from, you know, about banks, Russian banks, still, you know, if there was anything that it was pertaining to Trump Tower or anybody in the Trump who was involved with the Trump campaign, then Donald Trump could look at that and say, okay, you know what, this is garbage. I'm going to declassify this and release it. I get the feeling, and I don't know if you guys agree, I get the feeling that there's nothing there really, and he may already know about it. And that's the reason why they're just kind of like clamming up at this point. And doing stuff like, oh, I want the Obama administration investigated by Congress. You know, I think it was Hallie Jackson who asked the question, said, why do you need Congress to do an investigation when you just have this information at your fingertips? You can find out what happened right away. So I think that's probably part of it. But I think that's one of the things that, you know, David, I get your view on that is, since Obama did those kinds of things, this is the kind of thing that makes me nervous is that, you know, once an executive branch kind of opens things up, I mean, Bush was actually the first president to try and investigate leaks by using the Espionage Act, and then Obama just took it to a whole new level. What about President Trump? I mean, considering his temperament, you know, what kind of, you know, how are you concerned about him using the powers of the presidency in that way?
Yes, I'm very concerned. I mean, you know, one of the arguments you make when you talk about executive power abuses, which Obama, you know, was guilty of, in my opinion, is that others will use it as well. When you're defending what a president's doing, you have to remember that someone else will be president one day, and that person, you know, you might not like as much. So, and if you care about process, like for me, process is the most important issue, more important than actually the outcomes in some sense. Of course, I'm very concerned. And Donald Trump, I mean, James Clapper went in front of Congress and lied about tapping the phones of the American people, correct? So his word doesn't mean that much to me. And, you know, he said that it was baseless allegation that Obama had tapped, you know, Donald Trump's phones. But again, you know, it's how you parse the words. I mean, was he swept up in some kind of routine surveillance of Russian diplomats? I can see Donald Trump, who thinks everything's just about him, seeing his name on one of those reports, however it works, and then, you know, just going bananas over it, you know, because he's got, you know, it's Saturday, no one's around, and he's got his phone. So that to me seems like the most, you know, plausible sort of reason he went off that day. And since that day, we haven't heard anything about it, so other than from the media. So right. You're right.
Yeah, and it's interesting too that, you know, the Obama people have made this you know, a little bit more intriguing because they're only denying specifically the allegation of Obama tapping Trump's phones. They haven't really said anything. They haven't gone any further. They've been very narrow in their rebuttal of what people are saying. So they're not saying anything about the FISA warrants. They're not confirming or denying that. James Comey has said in a published report that they didn't do it, but I mean, it really wasn't a statement of much. So,
yeah, but didn't the New York Times, I mean, report that there was some sort of wiretapping going on and they were investigating the Russian ties?
Right. Yeah. They said there was no evidence that it was tied to the Trump campaign, or that Trump's name had come up or anything like that. So that's this kind of thing that's just weird. It could be something that's completely innocuous, had nothing to do with Trump himself. It's just that some kind of communication originated from Trump Tower at some point that's tied to one of these people that may not be anything. It just seems, you know, you're right, though, that the Trump campaign has gotten very quiet about the Trump team. I shouldn't say campaign. The team has gotten very quiet about this. Sean Spicer basically was just like, yeah, he believes what he said, but that's really all we're going to say about it.
I say a lot of dumb things on Twitter. I can't imagine, you know, 300 million people hanging on each word, and you know, there's no way to like delete your tweet and pretend no one's seen it. Yeah. I mean, the bottom line is he probably tweeted something he shouldn't or misunderstood something. And now, you know, everyone's going bananas over it. So I don't know. I think we're going to see a lot more of that happening.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've actually kind of like exhausted this topic pretty quick. So why don't we, if David, if you're all right, we'll discuss with you a little bit, maybe get your thoughts on the GOP Obamacare repeal and replace idea.
We could talk about that.
All right, good. All right, we'll be back here right after a word from our friends at Blue Apron.
Hey, folks, Neil Doing here, and I know you're probably busy, so I'm going to cut right to the chase. I want to talk to you today about our friends at Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Their mission? To make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. They achieve this by supporting a more sustainable food system while setting the highest standards for ingredients and building a community of home chefs. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron will deliver seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. You can choose from a variety of new recipes each week. Some of the upcoming meals are salmon piccata with orzo and broccoli, pork chops and miso butter with bok choy and marinated apple, vegetable chili and baked sweet potatoes with crispy tortilla strips, or spicy shrimp coconut curry with cabbage and rice. My wife and I tried this and we were amazed at how quick and easy it was. It took about 40 minutes. They sent instructions along and we were able to follow them to the letter, and it was great. Everything came together perfectly and we had some real delicious home cooking. So you can check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/fifth. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/fifth.
Okay, and we are back. We're here with David Harsanyi of the Federalist, and we just kind of went through all of the Trump accusations against the Obama administration, wiretaps, and all that kind of stuff. And I think we're
we're done talking about the president's tweets.
Yes.
Oh, thank God! I'll tell you. I'll confess something to you gentlemen and to our listeners. I played a miniature version of The Knowledge, which is a game where you attempt to not learn something. And I did that with President Trump's tweets this weekend. I knew he had tweeted something crazy, and it took me until Tuesday. No, it was Sunday. I didn't last very long to find out what exactly it was. So I am so happy to move on from that, let me just say.
All right. You are, yeah, well, yeah, I figured that, Neil. That
was I'm going to work hard to bring this back to a Donald Trump tweet. I think I can
do. Proudly ignorant.
Yes.
The Physicist Show, Neil Doing.
All right. So the big news this week, after the whole Trump tweet fiasco, was the long awaited GOP repeal / replace bill for Obamacare. Now, Seeing as how this was received, it doesn't seem like people are very happy. Jason Pai, who works for FreedomWorks, basically tweeted out a photo of a dumpster fire, saying, "This is my impression initially of the replacement bill." I've looked at it. I haven't really looked at the bill. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I've looked at other summaries. I think Access had a good summary of it. But already, though, and we'll talk about first about the about we'll get into the bill and what do we think of it. But one of the things that's bothering me, and I think David, you already wrote about this, was already with GOP senators already tucking tail and ready to like run from this thing, including Cory Gardner.
Right. So I've written two pieces on it already. I'm not a wonk, but I do trust certain people and their opinions on this. Philip Klein, for instance, and there's a lot I don't like about the bill. Though I think I like more about it than maybe some people. I still think it sucks, you know. But there are things obviously I like in it. But yeah, people like Cory Gardner sort of preemptively. I think there are four senators writing a letter that, you know, basically threatening that they won't support any bill that sort of undermines the Medicaid expansion. Right. So, which is a huge problem because it's that has to be part of the bill. And, you know, I just wrote a column showing more than one instance where Cory Gardner, who I actually like a lot and know for a long time, says he's going to repeal Obamacare, and he's asked specifically about Medicaid, and he doesn't say, oh, we have to save Medicaid. He says we have to, you know, repeal the whole bill. And more than once, he ran on this, his career, in fact. He can thank his career. Obamacare's failure has helped him have a political career, if not made his political career. And he's not the only one. We know that Republicans have won tons of seats since the implementation of Obamacare in the passage. And most of them, or many of them, were lying to the American people. They were never going to repeal it in a real way. This is not a repeal. This bill, at least to me, from my perspective, looks like something that tries to fix Obamacare in many ways, and does just enough to mollify conservatives, or tries at least, but does nothing to really repeal the bill. It still functions on the premises of the original bill.
And David, I mean, what is the obstacle to just flat out repealing Obamacare and returning health insurance to the state it was before, where people were, I think, 86% of people were happy with their health insurance before Obamacare. There were some people who could not afford insurance, and certainly things still need to be done to address that problem. But why not reset a little bit? What do we gain here by crafting this bill, which seems to me, from my cursory reading, you know, Obamacare light. It seems to anger the liberals because you're upending Obamacare, and it also seems to be angering conservatives because you're still keeping a subsidy and an entitlement for people.
Well, I think there's a broad problem. Sort of, the problem is that Republicans allow liberals to frame the debate, and the framing of the debate is that that no one is allowed to lose, quote unquote, lose their insurance. Meaning, we can't create different sorts of ways for people who can't afford it to buy insurance on their own by making it more reasonable, by trying to bring down costs, things like that. So we let them frame it in a sort of anti-market way, that there are no market, there's zero market, there are no market solutions that Democrats want to inject into this, only sort of fake marketplaces on statewide, things that didn't work out.
Right.
So I think that's the first problem. The second problem is that they're cowards, like most politicians are. They understand what the attacks on them will be. Half the people in this country will be mad at them, and they don't want to deal with that, and they're trying to sort of, you know, find a middle way, a third way out of this, which it seems to me it's going to be a disaster for them from both sides, because they will have supported this and be killed for it by liberals. They will have supported this and be killed by conservatives. And in the end, that's how you lose your seat.
Right. I mean, that's what I truly do not understand. I mean, the last several years have been absolutely partisan and vicious. And, you know, I'm as much of an establishment toady as the next guy, right? But it seems to me, you know, This is a layup. This is the easiest thing you could do to shore up your base. And yes, you're going to anger the Democrats and the progressives in this country, but you are going to do that regardless of whatever steps you took. No matter what you did, you were going to piss them off. So why not make someone happy? I just don't understand the rationale at all.
I point that out. I think that's a great point. The rhetoric, no matter what you put forward, is going to be that you're going to kill babies and you hate poor people and so forth. It's always the same message. So that should inhibit you from doing what you want. It should free you to do what you want, because you're going to be attacked in the same way. So why not incorporate ideas that you say you believe in, the ideas that you ran on? Cory Gardner, and I hate to pick on him because he's not the only one, voted to repeal Obamacare like 40 times.
Yeah.
But now when he can do it, he won't. It was just all theater. And,
yeah. The last time they voted to repeal it, well, the time that they actually got a repeal bill to President Obama's desk was when they voted to repeal in 2015, which included eliminating the Medicaid expansion. And Cory Gardner and these same three others, Lisa Murkowski, who else is it? From Ohio. I just lost my train of thought. Rob Portman.
Portman, yeah.
Yes, and I can't remember the other one. They all voted for it because they knew President Obama wasn't going to sign it. He wasn't going to sit there and say, you know what? I think I'm going to sign this just to see what you guys do. No, he vetoed it. And because there was no risk. And so now there's some risk involved because now Medicaid expansion has been there for X amount of years. And all of a sudden he does his turnaround. You're right. I think it's crazy. And the other point that you make is absolutely true. Even if this bill had included, say, one provision that was different from Obamacare, Democrats would act like it was the end of the world. And so they're going to do that regardless of what you put out. So you might as well just go ahead and just rip it out by the roots, or at least do something where you say we're sunsetting it. In 1 year, it's gone, and some other stuff is going to take over.
Right. You can phase it out. You don't have to immediately like throw everyone into open enrollment or whatever. It's like
right. I think people value stability to some extent, so you want to let them. It shouldn't be something jarring to the country. But there's ways to do that. But I want to just mention one other thing that people. I think it's an important point is that when Obamacare was being debated, the Democrats always claimed that they were trying to sort of compromise with Republicans. But the truth is they never did that at all. There was no good faith effort on that level. But they did have to compromise with their own moderates. And that's the reason you had sort of a watered down bill. That's why they had to use reconciliation. It had to be fixed. But so I think Republicans are in the same boat right now. You have four or five senators that can hold the whole party hostage. So I'm not sure how you get around that. Is Cory Gardner, or maybe he's a guy who would turn, but others won't. And then, so you have to essentially try to give them something to bring them aboard. And I'm not sure how easy that is. And what happens is that you have something that's watered down like this is, where you try to please everyone. It's really hard. That's why I don't understand why you have to have this broad reform and why you can't just repeal and then replace it in pieces. See what works. Let states do what they want. Do it one thing at a time. Defund Planned Parenthood. Whatever you want to do, you can do it incrementally and in parts. I don't understand why we sort of like have to do these giant reforms all the time.
Yeah, it just seems completely strange, because the other problem was with them saying that they're going to repeal certain parts of it is that the regulatory structure of Obamacare still will remain intact. And so you're still going to have a lot of problems. So even if you sit there and say, okay, well, this isn't around anymore, well, the regulatory burden may still be there in other areas. That's the reason why I think you have to go with repealing the entire thing. To sit there and say we're going to pull this back, like you said, though, you don't have to do it. It doesn't have to be a shock to the system. No one's going to sign it, and then tomorrow, all of a sudden, you're without health care. But the other thing that, David, you make the great point, is that the Republicans, of course, have allowed Democrats to frame the debate, and they've now Obamacare is all about coverage when it had nothing to do with coverage when they were passing it. It was about affordability. It wasn't the Coverage Care Act. It was the Affordability Care Act. And so now they're concerned about people being kicked out of their quote-unquote coverage, but some of the coverage that people have been forced to buy because of a mandate is garbage anyway. I mean, those were already covered. Those kinds of plans people could have gotten with catastrophic plans and paid a lot less prior to Obamacare. Now they're paying $1,000 a month in a premium for a plan that has a $7,000 deductible. It's like, why even bother? At this point, I could just sit there and save the money if I need it. So, that's the thing that bugs me, is that they're not out there. Once again, Republicans are, and you correct me if I'm wrong, and you and Neil can sit there and discuss it here, is they're out there once again doing X's and O's instead of kind of talking to people in a more down-to-earth way about what they want to do.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Democrats are like, where's the CBO, scoring and this and that? Well, the CBO hasn't been right about anything to do with Obamacare. So why is it that? I don't think voters care. Voters don't want to see a graph. They don't want to see an Excel printout. They want you have to hit them in a different way. So I don't understand why Republicans even allow themselves to be sucked into that sort of debate. it just seems to me that you're right. I mean, the initially Obamacare was supposed to be for everyone. It was going to help everyone. It was going to stop spikes in rates, all of that stuff. And now what is it? It's all about how Republicans are going to let children die because they want to take away Medicaid. So I think Republicans have to just forget that part of the debate and make their own unique case for why whatever their plan is, and not this one because there's, you know, it's not that great, but whatever their plan is and what, why it helps ordinary people, not just people who struggle to pay for insurance, who are important and we have to figure out ways to help them. But I think you forget about the giant middle class. And I think this is one of the reasons why, you know, why Democrats haven't done that well in elections recently.
I have a question here, and this is just sort of a, you know, speculation. The Democratic Congress in 2010 passed Obamacare. They did it by fair means and foul, but they passed it. And I think, it, given what has happened to the Democratic prospects, you know, not just in the U.S. Congress, but in legislatures all across the country, governor's seats, et cetera, this was a massive hit that they took, and yet they persisted. They went ahead and passed Obamacare, probably knowing that they would come in for this. So my question is, were the Democrats in 2010 braver than the Republicans of today?
I was actually thinking about that. I don't know if they were, because I'm not sure that they, I think that they probably believed that it would be popular one day, but they definitely were braver in sticking to their ideological guns. I mean, they had to bend somewhat to pull in some of the moderates that they had there, but I'm not sure that that's happening now at all, in the sense that this is the, usually a bill goes through a process and it usually becomes less conservative as it goes through that process.
Right.
So now we're going to go through the process with this bill that's already not conservative. I mean, people are arguing with me that, you know, this is just the beginning. This is just the framework. It's going to get, these things never get more conservative. I mean, someone mentioned Gang of Eight, I guess, is the only example of something going in that direction. And what happened there didn't pass. I feel like this is headed in the same direction. Which incidentally scares me as well, because then we're going to end up with nothing. And we're going to have the mechanisms of Obamacare in place. And when the Democrats come back, because one day they will have these mechanisms in place and they will do what they did with Obamacare, which is use it to socially engineer, use it to, you know, control. And that's the problem. So I think repealing it and then just dealing with the consequences, even if they're bad, is the braver thing to do and the better thing to do for Americans. But I don't think Republicans are very brave.
No. Well, it's the nature of the progressive vision. It's like you do the thing, and then it's very difficult to undo the thing once it's been done. You know, we've still got Social Security, for instance. So nobody's going after Social Security. Conservatives have accepted that paradigm where people have Social Security, and it's a precious, sacred right that they have.
No entitlement reform, no major entitlement, federal major entitlement reform has ever been repealed or weakened or shrunk down to size or anything, right? I mean, these things are forever. Once you give people something, it's almost impossible to take it away from them. Republicans have a short window right now, because the deeper you go into these terms, the harder it is to make changes. They might even lose the House. I don't know. So now is the time. And now is the time for them to do this. And the worst thing about this is they say they won't even get to taxes until they're done with Obamacare. So how long is that going to be, and when is that going to happen? So far, the Trump administration, or I should say the Republicans legislatively, have done basically nothing. And maybe that's how it's going to be for 4 years.
Yeah, and that's the big problem, is that you said the window is kind of short, because by the end of this year, members of the House are going to start campaigning for their reelection the following year. So there's and members of the Senate as well, because there's a lot of Senate seats that are up for grabs. So it's like, you know, if they could get it done here, if they would go the full repeal route, put it together and throw it on President Trump's desk. I mean, he'll probably sign it. I doubt he would veto it. I mean, that would be ridiculous. But you're right.
He has no ideology. He will sign whatever he thinks it will be popular. And if they can pass it, he'll sign it. I'm sure of it.
Right.
He's not going to veto a repeal of Obamacare when he campaigned on it. I mean, that would be crazy.
It would be crazy.
He might, but, you know, it's like...
It would be super crazy. And that's why we can't rule it out.
No. That's a good one, Neil. Very good. That would be like the ultimate. It's like they throw a thing. This is too tough. I'm going to veto this bill and ask them to come back and do it again.
If this bill fails and it's unpopular, then he will destroy Paul Ryan, in my opinion. I mean, I can see that happening. I could see him treating Republican Congress as the enemy, as he has done in the past. I think he'll do that again.
Oh, absolutely. If it comes off that it's harming him, then he'll just lay into Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell like it's nobody's business. You know, he'll just blame everything on them. So,
but it does seem like it'll pass the House. I mean, they'll have enough to pass it, I think. So,
right. The fight's going to be in the Senate. And if McConnell can do something to get these guys in line, you know, the only problem is like, again, with the bill that they've put forward, like you said, bills get less conservative as they go through the process. And what we have is a bill that just seems like a Band-Aid. And so I can see some of these things getting pulled out of there and some of it going back in. I think some of the Obamacare taxes are still in there. They didn't repeal all of the taxes from what I had a column that I read today. I don't know for sure.
Some of them sunset later.
But again, you know, with the sunset provision, that could always change if somebody else comes in the White House. So they could sit there and reverse that.
Because, I mean, everything moving forward now will be blamed on Republicans. That has to do with health care. So it seems unlikely to me that you're going to go through with getting rid of the Cadillac, you know, tax in the future. It just seems unlikely.
Yeah. And what was that? Like in 2025 or something like that?
It's, yep. You know,
it's, you know, two presidential elections away. So it's kind of odd, but,
we'll have single payer by then.
Trump care. Yeah. Everything will be wonderful at that time. We'll have single payer. I can't wait for that one. That'll be great right now.
Oh, I can't wait for Republicans to start defending a single payer system. It's going to be glorious.
Now, the other thing is we have these four senators that are, you know, saying that they are not, they don't like the plan, the House plan, because of the Medicaid provision. But you do have a couple of senators, or is there three right now? I know Mike Lee is one of them, Rand Paul. And I'm certain Ted Cruz will probably be there as well, who are saying we're not going to support something that's not a full repeal. But they've right. been quiet since this plan has come out. I haven't heard anything from them. Well, Rand Paul did.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. Not Ted Cruz, who has said nothing, but Mike Lee, Rand Paul.
Oh, really?
Okay. I think there was another one. I forget who it was.
Ted Cruz shrinks from the fight, eh?
It is odd.
It is. He hasn't said a word.
No, it's
about
not
it.
Odd. It's completely in keeping. I'm sorry. I need to stop now.
All right. Well, all right. So we got any closing thoughts on any of this? I mean, what so let's play, you know, if we're talking about me and, you know, in terms of my ability to see the future, if we go back to 2015, it's pretty bad. But are they going to, you think they'll get anything done this year? You think it'll happen?
I've been wrong about everything for the last year, but I think that, something will probably get done. I don't know how they survive without doing something. But maybe doing something is going to be worse for them. I mean, I think they should do, I am for passing something, even if it's terrible, because I think it's better than nothing. Which is very, you know, cuckish, elitist of me, but I think something will pass. I've been wrong before, but anyway.
Yeah, all right. I think something will pass as well. I think they're going to do something, and I kind of agree. I mean, I'm seeing people on Twitter saying if they pass this bill, I'm never voting GOP again, and it's kind of like, well, you know, let's wait and see what happens. Let's.
Well, I hate to say this, but maybe Donald Trump needs to get out ahead of this and sell it to his people. Maybe that's the only way to make it happen, which is weird to say.
Yeah,
because his fans are devoted. So maybe that's the way to go about it.
That's true. If he comes out and endorses, and he kind of did. I mean, he's basically out there talking about it. So if he does it again, where if he really goes out there and pushes what they've proposed, then you'll see, automatically they'll be on board.
Many of them, Trump fans.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right. Well, David, I want to thank you. Kind of, we're going to wrap it up here. Thanks, thanks so much for coming on the show. I know it was kind of short notice, and so I appreciate that.
Oh, my pleasure.
And you know, where can people find you on the inner tubes?
My work's mostly at the Federalist, where they can find me there. And on Twitter, I'm at David Harsanyi.
Yes. David is a Yankees fan, and the baseball season is getting ready to start. So I'm pretty excited about this team.
Yeah, it's the first time I've been excited in a long, long time. Probably almost, I guess, 10 years.
Yeah, this whole lineup and everything kind of reminds me of like the, you know, 94, 95 kind of thing, where they, you know, just a bunch of young guys and a couple of big stars, and so this should be interesting. But we do have one more piece of business before we let you go. The one gotcha question that we have, and we've had variations of this, and we're going to try a different one. And Neil and I disagree in a lot of things.
Perhaps nothing more than on this topic, though. This may be the big one. If anything was going to end the partnership between Jay Caruso and Neil doing it, it would be this issue, because we are at polar extremes, polar opposites here. So, David, here's the question. Is Seinfeld overrated?
No, absolutely not. I'm a huge fan.
Of course.
Well, I can guess that, Neil, you're the one who believes it's overrated.
I do indeed believe it is overrated.
I could tell that the Yankee fan probably wouldn't be the person who thought that. And even Danny Tartable was made humorous and likable on that show.
Yes.
But, yeah, I love that show. And I guess because I'm from New York, you know, maybe it speaks to me in a way that it wouldn't speak to someone who is from, say, some lesser state. Which
yeah.
Is all this.
The ones that'll go out of their way to brag that they're a Commonwealth. People
I was
like that.
Actually just about to say that.
See?
Touche. Touche.
Virginia's not a terrible place. I live in Maryland. So, yeah.
It is. It's not terrible at all.
No.
No.
I certainly understand the appeal of Seinfeld. I just think that it, you know, it shouldn't occupy such lofty heights.
I said a show that is still referenced in culture 17 years after it's gone off the air. More than that. 19 years almost. It went out. I think the final season was 1998. So, you know, that it's still referenced in culture is a show that had a major impact, and you can't say it's overrated and be right.
I'm comfortable with that.
It was also at the time, and you guys, I'm not sure if you watched it when it sort of was, you know, first started up. I'm probably older than you guys, but it was very different and very, I guess, edgy is the word compared to what was on TV. So I guess just remembering it from that aspect makes me like it more, and how it sort of changed how TV was done for a pretty long time. But that's just me.
Yeah, and it was, and I've been watching it since like the beginning, probably since 1990 when it was first on. So it's I've been a fan from the start, even when the first season, two seasons were, you know, they're okay until they did the Chinese restaurant,
right.
And that's when they kind of found their stride.
Wait, I think they came on after Cheers. Does anyone talk about Cheers anymore? Cheers is an awful
show.
No,
nobody talks about Cheers.
Oh, I liked Cheers. I'm sorry. This is terrible.
But Cheers was extremely popular before Seinfeld, and then you know, Friends was sort of the big show as well, which I can't tell you how much I hate. So. I don't know. I have good memories of Seinfeld. I just think it was in its era, maybe the best.
For a while, it was like Seinfeld, and then what was the hospital one? Not Chicago.
ER.
ER were like the two juggernauts on TV. So NBC could pretty much put anything in that 9:30 p.m. slot, and it would get high ratings because nobody changed the channel.
I do not. So from like St. Elsewhere. To ER to like whatever the shows are now about hospitals, it's just one big show to me. I've never watched one episode of them, so I don't really know. I think George Clooney was on ER, right?
He was. There was ER, which was like the rundown Chicago County Hospital, and then there was Chicago Hope, which was the fancy private hospital.
I think there's like a Chicago hospital show on now.
Yeah, Chicago MD. There's like four of them. Chicago PD, Chicago Fire, Chicago MD, and now Chicago Justice. It's like, you know, Dick Wolf is back with a vengeance after Law and Orders. He, you know, he figured there was five Law and Orders. He's got to have five Chicago somethings. So,
Neil, do you like Curb Your Enthusiasm? Is that a show that you enjoyed at all? Or what?
I do enjoy Curb Your Enthusiasm, actually, when I can catch it. Yes. Right. I'm a fan.
So Larry David would be happy to hear that. So
I like Larry David's perspective on things. However, I don't think Seinfeld was a big hit. It just doesn't work for me.
You are like the George character, Neil, though. I mean, you're like a combination of Jerry and George, if you can imagine that.
Well, Jay, you are my Newman.
not Newman. No, not Newman. I don't even know. No, I'm not like any of those people. They're all. I like George the best, but you know,
really,
as a character, I think he's the funniest.
The worst person on earth.
Of course, that's the reason why he was so funny, because he didn't care. He didn't care. That was the best part. So
that explains why you put up with me, I guess.
Yeah, that has a lot to do with it, I would imagine. Yeah. All right.
Well, David, we've held you hostage for long enough. Thank you so much for joining us and talking some Seinfeld, and also the pressing issues of the day.
What's funny is, you know, the George Steinbrenner character on Seinfeld reminds me a lot of Trump. You know, when he yells at the desk from behind. So. Yes, it was a pleasure to talk to you guys. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate it, David, and we'll hopefully have you back sometime like that.
Yeah, anytime.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the Fifth Estate. As we said before, go out there, tell your friends to leave us a rating, tell your friends to subscribe, tell everybody about it, tell your mom, tell your dad, make Neil happy. Neil likes to be happy.
Yeah, I mean,
sort of.
You would. Mildly please me.
Yeah, it would that's his version of happy. See what I mean? That's how I know him. Mildly pleased. All right. That's going to do it. I'm Jay Caruso for Neil Doing. We'll see you next time here on the Fifth Estate.